Well, we want to thank everyone who participated in our Take the Red Pill 2011 Infinite Loop Contest, where we were soliciting feedback on our episodes. And our lucky winner by random drawing is Chessie. So, Chessie, congratulations for winning this. And you get your choice of a free intuitive session with Donald or a free tarot reading with me. So we'll look forward to being able to give you your gift. Step right up and claim your prize. Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This week, Donald and I are going to discuss Ascended Masters, which actually was going to be part of our Angels and Guides episode, but we really didn't get a chance to speak on that. So we're going to actually dedicate this episode to that. Donald, why don't you go ahead and get us started on that?
I think we mentioned Ascended Masters briefly in the Angels and Guides episode, but then we just moved on to it more of the Angels aspect and the Guides aspect and the Ascended Masters aspect. So I think for me, Ascended Masters are basically people who have lived physically on Earth and have reached a certain level of, you know, spiritual understanding, wisdom, or whatnot. When they die, when they pass on, they have the choice to, you know, either guide certain people to, you know, relay this wisdom to them, or to, you know, move on in the universe to whatever else you do after, you know, you go. That's my kind of definition and view of Ascended Masters. Is that similar to yours?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's a lot of similarity. I do want to kind of address in the definition that you gave. There's an idea that guides, spirit guides that we have, that some of the spirit guides we have are actually were once incarnate on this planet in physical form. So how would you differentiate a spirit guide from an ascended master?
I think a spirit guide is more of, I don't know, kind of like a human resources person. There's more of them there, and they're more specific just to you and your life path and your goals and things that you specifically want to accomplish in this incarnation for you. Whereas an ascended master is more general for the whole population, for the mass consciousness and evolution of humanity as a whole.
For people who are not familiar with the idea of ascended masters, can you give any examples of people who would be considered or would have been considered ascended masters, I guess, however you want to look at it?
I think right off the bat, it'd be like Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad. Basically,
saying basically as Jackie says, the BMOCs, the big men on campus.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you start a religion and you're saying something at a certain time that people fall in line with, they continue out through centuries after you're gone. I think you had something really, really potent right there, and you know, that would lead you up to that whole ascended master level. I could be wrong, though.
How would you differentiate, like, Martin Luther King Jr.? Would he be considered an ascended master? What qualifies them? If a religion started based on them? If a religion did not start from a person who was once on this earth, then would they not qualify as an ascended
master?
I'm just wondering if the definition is exclusive.
No. That's just the easiest example that I could think of at the moment. You know, we'll use the example of Martin Luther King. I'm sorry, Martin Luther King Jr. Mm-hmm. Got to be specific. Yeah. I think he reached a level of understanding there is a way that we can react and live, and then there's this other way that we can react and live. And I think that is probably more of, you know, kind of like a core of ideal of what an ascended master does, where it's not just for one person or one group, but everybody as a whole. And if I remember correctly, Martin Luther King Jr. had a lot of the way that his speeches were written were not just race related. They were they referred to that, obviously, but they were implying humanity as a whole thing, where it's just, it wasn't just, you know, blacks and, or whites and, or this. It was like, you know, people should be good to people. And I think Gandhi did the same thing. He's like, you know, I could fight, but violence begets violence, so I'm not going to do that, but I'm going to stand up for my beliefs regardless. And there's, and he definitely went through a lot of hardships with that.
It's interesting about the Ascended Masters, because I don't believe that you have to be, to start a religion to be considered an Ascended Master. I think what qualifies and defines an Ascended Master is if your energy that you had on Earth, if you are, if you were, had a enough of a connection to Source, or your incarnation really kind of embodied what our physical existence and our spiritual existence, if you really could not even separate the two, when you're that, when your physical and spiritual that intertwined, when you understand on a very implicit level how interconnected all things are, and I'm let me put a finer point on that.
Okay.
I know about the interconnection, connectedness of us. I know that we are all interconnected, but I forget all too often. I do know it, and I don't doubt it necessarily, but I don't operate that way 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. I just don't. I don't operate that way. I know. I mean, I know that's true. I know that we are all reflections of each other and expressions of each other. I have it kind of in a spiritual level, and I have it on a mental level and on a heart space level, but I don't live it so implicitly. I still feel that the ego separation, I still feel the identity separation, where I think the Ascended Masters saw beyond that. They did not preserve their identity. They didn't work from an ego. And I don't mean ego as in I'm a big shot, or the Freudian way again. I think of the ego as just that isolated, insular self-identity thing. I think they were aware of the self, but their self was still synonymous to everything else as far as they were concerned, and they operated from that place. And as a result of that, their energy translates from both sides of the veil when they were here incarnate and on the other side. It's an energy that is almost timeless in a way, which I think explains why legends will talk about South Americans or Mesoamericans having seen Christ appear and things like that, all those kind of myths and legends. Saint Germain is another example of who had been considered an Ascended Master.
So is it possible for the guy down the street to be an Ascended Master?
Well, I guess it's possible. Sure, why not?
Yeah, because that's what I was thinking. You'd asked what examples can I come up with of Ascended Masters. I'm like, well, yeah. Well, probably one names of people that people already know about. I could have said, oh, Bob lives a few houses down.
Well, people know about it today, though. I mean, in Christ's day, how many people really knew about Christ when he was alive? Not many. I mean, he covered a pretty small area. If you look at the area that he kind of wandered around while he was alive, and he only made it to 33, yeah, not many people knew about him. The local government did and said, yeah, he's a threat to the system. He's being blasphemous, and that's really going to cause a lot of political problems.
Let's Neo, the one.
It's, oh, God.
Sorry. couldn't resist.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of talk about I think we talked about that in the movie episode too, the analogies between Neo and the Matrix and the Christ.
Yeah.
Didn't we?
I have no idea. I don't remember it if we did.
Oh, really? I think we did. We might have. I think we talked about the Messianic. You know, maybe I'll go back and listen to it to be sure. In Christ's day, they didn't know who he was. He was just another guy running around preaching, and he was, you know, people liked it, but he was a threat to the system. But if you look at the world population, the number of people who knew about him at the time, mm-hmm. Christ at the time was Bob down the street.
Oh.
If you think about it, if you didn't, you know, someone might have said, yeah, he's a preacher. But I think when the message is so profound and resonates so deeply within us, when they're that connected to Source, they can convey a message, and they can walk and live from a certain way, that it's going to have a profound effect on humanity. And of course, it's going to reach across time, because to be connected with that, to be that aware of your connection to Source, you're working outside of the confines of time.
Oh yeah, like you said, also, you know, kind of like being aware of your ego, but not being as influenced by your ego as much as most people are. And I admit, like you had said as well, I understand the connectedness on a mental, emotional, and spiritual level. But it's very difficult to stay in that space all the time. I think that's why we call them ascended masters, because they have mastered that ability to stay in that space all the time, to be in that place, and at any given moment be able to react to anybody or anything that happens, that comes their way, from a very highly spiritual, evolved wisdom center, as opposed to like myself, where that, depending on how I'm feeling that day and where I am, you know, it's like you get me at the right time of the day, it's like, oh, I can be very spiritual, not the problem. You get me at another time of the day, I'm like, oh man, just bad timing. Go away, come back in 5 minutes.
Now, there's people that call on ascended masters. They talk about an energy that the ascended masters can offer, which I think this is why we incorporated it into the whole spirit guide and angels conversation, because as people call on their spirit guides for guidance and angels for their energy, people also do call on the ascended masters. Are you familiar with that at all?
I've heard of it, but that's about as far as my familiarity with it goes, is that I've heard about it.
Okay.
And I think that's probably where we got a little distracted with the angels and guides episode, when we started talking about ascended masters, is because people that do call on that energy also call on, you know, angels and great religious leaders and other things, and other their guides and everything from, you know, they can call on any one of these or all of these energies at the same time. And I think we kind of got lost. It was like, oh yeah, angels, angel energy. Oh yeah, okay, I know a little bit more about that. I think the calling on ascended master energy, I really have not had a lot of experience with it. I haven't really gone out and done it that much, and I haven't really read a lot or had many experiences with people who have done that as a normal part of their practice of, you know, meditation or whatever on a daily basis.
My understanding of it is that people call on ascended masters for assistance in various ways. They may call on various ascended masters for specific areas that they want to work on, as people would call on specific guides or specific angels for specific energies and things like that. That's my understanding of it.
So is there a Rolodex of ascended masters that you're talking about?
There are people who kind of, there is a, I forget what it's called, but there's kind of a master teaching program that's out there where people do study each of the ascended masters and what they offer, kind of like the way people do when they're learning angel therapy, how people who learn angel therapy learn the names of the different angels so they can call on them by name. I think there's something similar to that. And I think Mary Magdalene might be considered an ascended master.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's a list, kind of like we have lists of angels, call on this angel for help in these areas of your life. And, you know, is there a list of ascended masters that's like, oh, call on these masters for these areas of your life that you need help in?
Well, I think there is. There's a person I go to for massage therapy, and she has somebody that works out of her clinic, it's a wellness center. And one of the people that works out of her wellness center is a medium, and he works with the ascended masters as well. And I saw that on his in his space, he has pictures of the various ascended masters. And there's several from India and Asia, and of course the more what we know more in Western culture, which is more Eastern, Saint Germain and Jesus the Christ and all those other people. So I think there is. Yes, I do think there is. I don't know enough about it, but I believe that they kind of outline that in those master programs and other teachings. I'm going to look for it, and I'm going to put a link to it. See if we can get the who's who of Ascended Masters.
I can just see it now.
Put like their directory. You know, if you want Buddha floor 301.
Extension 301.
Exactly.
Extension 202. And then, of course, you know, have like baseball playing cards of Ascended Masters. Oh, man, you got Buddha? Dude, I've been looking for Buddha for like the past 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, right? collectible trading card game?
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you've been trying to reach Buddha. Can you hold, please? There's a lot of people trying to reach Buddha, more than trying to reach Christ, that's for sure. Just by the numbers, so.
Oh, yeah. He had to upgrade his telephone service.
Yeah, he had to get extra few lines going in.
Hire a few more receptionists.
So I'm curious of something. What is your perspective? Because you were raised in a religious environment.
Mm-hmm.
That did embrace the notion of the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I know that you're not, that you don't subscribe to that faith now. So what is your current view of Jesus the Christ, or the Christ Ascended Master, whatever you want to call him?
JC. I look at him as just a very highly spiritual person. Like I would look at what we said, Buddha or Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr. or, you know, somebody who had a lot of wisdom and was able to inspire a large amount of people during their lifetime. I knocked him off the pedestal of, you know, the divine pedestal, and brought him back down to more of a human level, just a very highly inspirational human. So
I understand what you're saying. Yeah, what you did is you took the worship element out of it.
Oh yeah, I learned that was kind of a way for me to give away my power if I did worship at anybody at that level. That took a little bit of time for me to learn, is, you know, bringing people, places, and historical figures and, you know, other things off that pedestal, regaining some of the power that I'd been giving away to these things for a number of years. And so when that happened, then it felt more like a equal playing ground, just with people that had different specialities.
Granted, if we're not deifying Christ, why do you think that his message created such an extremely powerful institution and or system of belief?
I think it was basically timing. I think there was probably something, there was the culture at that time was really wanting something, and it was very chaotic with, you know, a bunch of these street prophets. You know, I lived in the South for about 13 years, and one of the whole quips is basically, yeah, you can't basically drive two blocks without hitting a church or passing a church. And yeah, there's a lot of places where that happens. And I would think in this culture where there's these street prophets, you couldn't walk 5 feet without hearing somebody say something. I think his message may have been either unique enough, or he was charismatic enough, or more charismatic than others, that some things fell in place. And I'm not sure exactly what all they could have been or whatever, but I think it was just a perfect time and place for what he was saying, and it really got a hold of a number of people. They were like, yeah, we'll go with that. Kind of like what today would be like, well, actually, I'd have to go back a couple decades, like the 80s, 70s or 80s, where a show comes on and everybody knows about it. I guess I could use The Simpsons as an example. You know, there are people that are graduating or that have graduated college and have started their career that have never lived without The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
They've been around so long that people all over the world know them. And, you know, you show them an image, people are like, oh, Simpsons, yeah, Simpsons. Just the image of one of The Simpsons brings about this whole pop cultural storyline of, you know, okay, you know, Marge is this type of personality, you know, Maggie is this type of personality, Lisa is this type of personality, Bart is this way, and of course Homer and the rest of the cast are this certain way. So you see an image of just one of them, you have this whole backstory, this whole understanding of everything, of all those things that have come out in the shows, or that have come out in the episodes over the years. And I think probably it was something like that with Christ, where it was something where so many people had come out with little pieces here and there, and he may have just basically said, that's a good one, I'm going to put that in my little box, and then, you know, someone else said something over here, and he's like, oh, I like that too, put that down, and he basically put them all in one place, and, you know, said, okay, so, dot, 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 dot. People are like, oh, when you put them all together like that, it makes a lot more sense. I don't know. I'm letting my mind go for a while there.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So, what is your understanding of why he would have been become such a point? And, you know, we don't have to limit to just him. We can go to any and all other ones as well.
Well, I wanted to address him because this is Western culture that we're smack dab in the middle of, and we are, for all intents and purposes, Western culture is based on Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that we are a Christian culture. I am saying that we're based on Christianity. I'm saying that we have social mores and laws and all these ideas that are based on the teachings of Christ. If I'm not saying our laws are Christ's laws. I'm saying that they've evolved from that. I'm saying that if Christ had not walked the earth, Western culture would not be what it is today.
It looked very different.
It would look very different. It was the catalyst and the forming, and all these things were born of that.
Mm-hmm.
So what I believe is why he took off and why his message is embraced by what is considered the most, in quotes, powerful nation or nations in the world,
mm-hmm.
is because before he came along, I think the Eastern philosophies had it, but we weren't going anywhere near that. We're like, no other gods and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What he did was he said, you know what? We are all divine. Every single one of us is divine in and of ourselves. All we have to do is recognize our divinity, recognize our connection to one another, recognize that we are all interconnected, that if we do something to somebody else, we're really doing it to ourselves. I think that's what he said, and it kind of got mixed up. Did he perform miracles? I don't know. But if you really are connected on that level, you really can understand another person from where they're coming from to a very profound degree, where you could do things like incite them to be able to heal themselves, to awaken the divinity within themselves. And I think he said that. His message was, we are all divine. Once we embrace our own divinity, we will understand that, number one, we are God.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, we are immortal.
Mm-hmm.
That our spirit will continue on. It is our own self-hatred and self-suffering and denial of our divinity that's what destroys us. And what happened is I think that people did one of two things. I think the institutions realized that you could take aspects of this and create power from it, tap into its own source of power, but yet embrace the power that the institution holds, but yet don't allow the followers to embrace it. So they see the church as a base of power, and that would serve people still in the ego state that mm-hmm. are hungry for, and I put in quotes, powerful, hungry for power. I put power in quotes to say that it's not true power. It's the illusion of power. So
power quotes.
They're power quotes. They're really big, giant quotes in I don't know, Times New Helvetica, 36 font size. Anyway, but I think that, and then on the other hand, you have the followers who are basically said, yeah, he is the one who's divine. All that came from him was because he was the one who was divine, and he was just basically saying, yeah, I am divine. But so is everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, don't just put this on me. It's really in you. You just got to be able to see it. I just happen to see it in myself. And I see it in you. You just need to see it in yourself and everybody else. But they didn't. Because people are just like, no, I can't think like that. I can't do that. I can't recognize that. But if somebody can, then they must be divine. But if I can't, then I am not divine. And I think that the reason that that grabbed is because it gave a very small clue to our source of power, our true source of power, not the power in quotes, not power quotes, not Helvetica 36, but the idea that our power lies in our freedom, and our freedom lies in our free will. Our free will is our true source of power. Our choice is our true source of power. And I think that when that awoken us, then you have countries like ours that embrace the idea of freedom, mm-hmm. because that is born out of that idea. So I think that that is his message, awaken the divinity within ourselves. But we never really, we got a glimpse of it and a taste of it. Mm-hmm. And we worked with only the glimpse and the taste, but we never really embraced the whole pie. That's why I think he took off with a bang.
And I think that's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, where when I said if you start a religion that, you know, lasts and lasts and lasts generation after generation, then yeah, you're probably a spiritual, you know, an ascended master. And that's the reason why I said, because if you start a religion, then there's something that you're saying to a group of people that is really hitting them at the core of who they are in one way or another.
Well, why does it become religions instead of spiritualities, though?
Because people like to flock together under the same guise of commonality. When you get together, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah. If we take it into the political realm, you know, there are people that are still like, yeah, Reagan was a great president and everything, and you know, I'm not going to say one way or the other, and then Clinton was a great president one way or another, and George W. Bush was a great president. You know, depending on who you are, you're going to believe one way or the other, and then you're going to find other people that believe that as well. You're going to start talking and everything, and I mean, just in the episodes that we've had, that we've recorded, we've come up with some really, you know, interesting ideas through our discussions. And I think when people start talking in larger groups, these little things come out, and then one person says, "Oh yeah, did you know that he walked on water? Yeah, that, how did he do that? Like, I don't know." And then it spreads like wildfire throughout the whole thing. Like, wow, well, how would you walk through water? And then, of course, you know, you look at it from today's perspective, like, oh yeah, we've seen movies of how people walk on water. Well, they didn't have that back then. Maybe he was some kind of magician or something. Like, no, no, no. So I think there's stuff that has to come out at that point, at that certain time. And when you get a few people that are really into what you're saying, they start talking when you're not around. They start adding little pieces here and there to whatever you said. It kind of becomes this whole big thing.
You're talking about myth. You're talking about the mythology of religion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about the aspects like, let's take Buddha, another ascended master. A Buddhist, well, number one, there's two things about Buddhism which I find very interesting, is that the Buddhists don't worship Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. In fact, they say, you know, yes, there was a Buddha. There may have been several Buddhas. There may have been no Buddha, and it's really irrelevant who or what the Buddha was. What's really relevant is what was said. They embrace the symbology behind the Buddha, but they don't worship the Buddha per se. That's considered a religion. What's interesting is I don't think Buddhists usually consider Buddhism a religion. They consider it a philosophy or a lifestyle or spirituality, but they don't consider it a religion. However, it is categorically considered a religion.
Oh, yeah. I think it's the only one that is considered a religion that does not have a religious figurehead.
And so I guess my question there is what creates a religion that when there is no figurehead to put to the religion?
You can have religions and stuff that does not have a figurehead. I mean, like you said, the idea of focusing on the symbology of, you know, divine wisdom as opposed to the guy who said, you know, what the divine wisdom. It's very easy to come out as an author, not sign your name or anything to a piece of work or a blog or whatever, then basically spout out this some religious stuff. A small group of people can really go for it, and then if it spreads, then it spreads, and you know, in a thousand years, who knows? But I think if you don't have somebody who's taking credit for it, then people's like, well, we don't know who it came from. It came from this place over here. We're going to go with the message and not really worry about who said it. And then, of course, I think in the case of Buddhism, that was one of the things where it's like, oh, yeah, the Buddha kind of set up the whole idea of how to look at the world, a perspective to get to, whereas he didn't necessarily say, now, I've been able to get here, so you can too. And this whole idea of a perspective, which is extremely powerful, did not take the power away from a lot of people that follow Buddhism, much like they did with Christianity, where it's like the church is like, oh, we want to be powerful. Well, you must give your power to us, so we'll take care of all the spiritual stuff. You just give your power to us. And with Buddhism, it's like, look over here. What do you see? Look over here. What do you see? Like, oh, well, if we're doing this, then it's very difficult for us to see you as anything more than a teacher, instead of, you know, maybe this omnipotent divine being in physical form, like they have with other spiritual leaders.
The Bob next door, do you think that he would be able to be received to the degree to become an ascended master today in this culture?
This goes back to what I was saying earlier, where I think it has to be a perfect place, time, and person, and message. And I think all those things have to happen at the same time in a certain way that allows somebody to really grab hold of the ideas and the inspirations of the people that are out there. I think, especially in America, it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for anybody to come out, you know, like Jesus did, and say, oh, by the way, guess what? What you believe in, not so great. Let's go over here. Let me show you a different way. Because there are so many people that are so ingrained in their belief system that any change to that is basically going out of tradition. And people oftentimes don't like to go out of tradition on a regular basis. And so, to answer your question, I don't think that it would be easy, but at the same time, I'm not going to say that it's impossible. If you want to go with some local, with some up-to-date current things, or people that, you know, might be able to be ascended masters in the future, we could go with Oprah Winfrey, because even though there's a lot that she's still very tied into, you know, the media and all these things and the materialism and things of this nature, I personally feel like she has a very strong connection to this Christ consciousness, this spiritual aspect of being connected, that we're all connected and whatnot. And I know that there's other people as well, too, so.
Well, I don't know that there really is. In our stage of consciousness, I don't think there's room for the need for an ascended master to be here currently. I think if you're going to use the old idea of the return of Christ, I think it's more of the embracing of the Christ consciousness, as the term is that is kind of bandied about these days. My definition of the Christ consciousness is what I talked about earlier, which is that we all embrace very fully and wholly the divinity within ourselves, and we operate from that place. Because whether you embrace the divinity in yourself or not, you're still divine. We are all still divine. We still create our reality. We still are gods within our own right. You ever see those movies? I don't have an example of one movie, but you ever see those movies where somebody stumbled upon a superpower, and then they start using their superpowers and they start kind of causing chaos because their powers are out of control?
Oh, yeah.
They don't know how to use them. They've discovered, I've got these powers, but, you know, I don't know what to do with them. So all of a sudden they're lighting things on fire accidentally and things are blowing up. And
with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, exactly, that whole idea. And I think the thing is we're like that. We have all this power, but we don't really know how to use it. So what we do is we blame everybody else. We give them all the power. We say we attribute it to them, which is kind of a weird thing. It's like, well, if they have so much power, how come I don't? You know, it's, I'm like, all right, let's think about this. So I think that to have the return of Christ in the whole biblical revelational kind of way doesn't really play out, in my opinion, because number one, we're jaded to miracles. We see stuff every day that really, by rights, should be considered miracles.
Oh, yeah.
So living to 100 really is a miracle. If you 100 years ago, that was a miracle, or 500 years ago, whatever. TV sets are miracles, and the internet and the wireless, those are all miracles. So we're jaded to miracles. So you're not going to buy anyone with those kind of tricks as they would be seen. The second part of it is that we've got the cult of personality. And unfortunately, I think Oprah falls into the camp of the cult of personality. Not that it's anybody's fault that they are part of the cult of personality. It's just we have a society that creates the cult of personality. And unfortunately, with the cult of personality, we put them on pedestals and we knock them down, and we put them back up and we knock them down. We put them back up and we knock them down. But it's all because we've had this weird way of removing them from the rest of us, and then we don't like the fact that they seem beyond human, so we try to find ways to confirm that they really are human by looking at their frailties and foibles. So I think that we don't have any room to experience our next spiritual growth by having some one great spiritual leader. I think it's going to be a composite of a lot of little messages that are all out there that each person can take and choose what they want to be able to awaken themselves spiritually.
Oh, yeah. I can see that completely. Where, you know, we don't need another hero.
Messiah? We don't need another Messiah.
Messiah or anything. Because we're at a point where we need to learn to become our own Messiah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And basically choose what our belief system is. What is it in us that is, that we see as specifically divine? Of course, you know, if you get to that point, it's just like, well, it's all divine. Yeah, well, so is everyone else. Like, well, that's kind of cool. Sweet. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, exactly. What do we do with that now? You know, okay, so everyone's divine. Okay, so nobody's more special than the other person? No. Well, then I'm no better than anyone else, and nobody's better than me. I'm like, yes. Well, I like the nobody's better than me, but I don't know about the whole, you know, I'm not better than anybody else. Like, get over it.
Well, see, here's the way I look at it. I look at it more so that is, say you've got a big giant boulder just laying out in the middle of the street, and then some guy comes along and ties a rope to it and starts pulling it. Well, him pulling the boulder is analogous to us creating our reality, to mm-hmm. our own divinity, how what happens in our reality is due to our own creation. Mm-hmm. As individuals and en masse. As individuals, what it is if we're all tying ropes to this and saying, I'm the one who has the rope, you're just in the way, even though there's another person that has a rope that's pulling the rock in a completely different direction. I think right now that's what happens. And what we do is we're pulling the rock, and then we look at the guy pulling it in the other rock and say, you're the reason that I can't pull this rock because you're pulling it the other way. So instead, what we do is yeah, I understand what you're saying, is we're all special just like everybody else. Is if we realize that we're all are divine and we are creating our reality, we are creating the mess as well, because we are co-creating conflict. Mm-hmm. We are not recognizing that we're all from the same divine source. We all seem to think that we're from different sources or behave like it. So what that does is divinity is creating its own conflict within itself. Instead of us all saying, all right, let's pull the rock in this direction, and it's going to be so easy to do. And we're going to say, oh my goodness, we're 10 times more powerful united than we are opposed.
Yeah. But how do you look at that when you have so many different people that have so many different ideas? I mean, you can take just Christianity in and of itself, where you look over time, all the different types of Christianity that have come out over the centuries, and people that have gone Methodist or Lutheran or, you know, Baptist or Mormon or whatever. If we all search inside ourselves to find our own divinity, then it would be specific to us. And how would we then realize that, okay, let's all agreed to pull the boulder this way, as opposed to you pull that way, I'll pull this way, and why are you pulling it this way when it'd be easier to go that way?
Have you ever seen somebody that you wanted to be like?
Oh, yeah, I think everybody has.
Well, okay. Now, do you believe you can be like that person that you admire?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think everybody else does?
Sure, why not?
No, you do believe that everybody else thinks that they can be like the person they admire?
To a large degree, yes.
I disagree.
Not a clone. I'm not talking about a clone.
No, I'm not talking about a clone either. Let's take the little boy that says that's Michael Jordan.
Okay.
That has posters of Michael Jordan on the wall. And he says, I'm going to be the next Michael Jordan. And then you've got people saying, well, no, you can't be Michael Jordan because of this and that and that and that and that. Eventually, he's going to buy into what they say. And you know, I thought about this because...
But what if he doesn't?
What if he doesn't?
What if he doesn't buy into what everybody is telling him?
Well, here's the thing about it is, for some reason, we seem to take our cues from people who don't believe in themselves. We've got parents that teach children that they're flawed and failed, and the children are, of course, their parents are their lifeblood, and they sustain and their source of who they are, their identity and what they can and can't do, and that these parents are struggling through their lives to figure out, you know, their place in the world and to find their own source of power. So, yeah, that's a problem. When it starts young, it's a really big problem. I don't think as parents we, and this might be unfair for me to say this, and it is unfair because I don't have children. So you know what? Throw a shoe at me. I don't care. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna be the guy who talks about kids that doesn't have, or talks about raising kids that doesn't have kids. Well, if you had kids, it would be different. I'm like, yeah, I know. It would be different. I don't have kids. Maybe I'm here to kind of give a little peek. What is wrong with telling your child that you are capable of anything?
Mm-hmm.
But people don't do that because we, you know, you have to put your faith in something you worship, or you have to use the cult of personality and say, these are the people that are special, that have been bestowed and endowed by God or whatever to have this. You're just the C student. Just forget it. Give up your dreams. And of course, the thing is, you know who's going to tell people that? People who don't have any faith in themselves, who don't believe in their own richness and divinity.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, it kind of reverberates and propagates and keeps itself going. I don't know. It's when we. I don't know where to start with this thing. When we sit and put people on pedestals like we do in the cult of personality, and I think maybe Western culture has created the cult of personality, and that's a symptom of the Christian religion. Because we have done this with this ascended master. We have taken and put him on pedestals, and his spirit is sitting there going, no, that's not how you do it. Do it. Don't put anybody on a pedestal. Don't put yourself. Don't put me on a pedestal. I don't need to be on a pedestal. You just need to know that you're divine and that you create your own reality. Don't give your power away to me. And what, unfortunately, when you give your power away to even an ascended master, then what you're doing is you're saying, I'm powerless. I'm nobody. And when you do the I'm nobody thing, then all of a sudden you're going to behave like that and act like that. And you are going to take the beautiful, cherishable nugget that is one's own life and debase it and kick dirt all over it.
So what happens if you call on that energy of an ascended master or your guides or an angels? Wouldn't that be giving your power away as well?
Not necessarily. It depends on how you call on them. Because angels and ascended masters and guides, anything of any energy of a higher vibration or consciousness of a higher vibration pays the utmost respect to free will. What they'll do is they'll say, you know what, I'll show you how you can do this. I'll give you clues on how you can do this, but I can't do it for you. So if you say, okay, I'm going to call on my angels, or I'm going to call on Christ, or I'm going to call on Mother Mary to give me some help to figure out how I can get myself out of this or how I can improve my situation. And they may give you clues. They may all of a sudden send you a letter to apply to some company to get a better job. They may give you an article that tells you how to better your relationship with your spouse. All these kind of things. They can't force you to read the article. They can't force you to apply for the job. But they could say, you know what? Maybe here's a hint. But if you sit there and say, okay, it's like the old story about the guy who the town flooded and he was sitting, the water kept rising, and he says, he said, I know God's going to save me.
Oh, yeah.
You know that old story?
Oh, yeah, and he sent a boat and a...
Yeah, a boat came by, and he says, nope, nope, God's going to save me. And then the helicopter came by, no, no, God's going to save me. And then he ended up drowning, and he goes to heaven, and God, he says, God, I thought you were going to save me. And he's like, well, I sent you a boat, I sent you a helicopter, it's all that kind of stuff, you know. So I think it's that same idea that if you sit there and ask angels to do everything for you, it's not going to happen, if that answers your question.
I'm just looking at it whereas what happens if we start relying totally on our own divinity, on our own inspiration, on our own stuff like that, where we do not give our power away to anybody or any other thing.
What happens when we do that?
Yeah.
Oh, I believe that we raise consciousness. I believe that we realize how capable of miracles we are.
Even if we're wrong?
Well, see, here's the beauty of that. Yes, especially if we're wrong, because... The thing is right now, we are so afraid of making mistakes. We're so afraid of being wrong. We are so petrified that we're going to screw up that we don't realize that there are no mistakes. There are no screw-ups. What there are is there are lessons for us to improve. There are opportunities for us. It's like when you pass geometry and you go down to algebra. You're like, yay, I know geometry now. And then they throw an algebra problem. You don't all of a sudden know that. It's like, oh, well, now I have to study and now I have to stretch my brain and now I have to learn how to get through algebra. It's like people who are like football players or learning plays on the field.
Mm-hmm.
You don't automatically know how to run the plays out of the gate. You have to practice them over and over again. And when you do it, you're going to stumble. You're going to fall. You're going to get hurt. You're going to have problems. You're going to struggle. You're going to not struggle. I don't like struggle. It's a whole other thing. You're going to have challenges that you have to overcome. You can't learn anything without a challenge before you. But the thing is instead of seeing it as challenges, we see them as being wrong, and the ego gets all freaked out. Like the original sin, the whole idea of original sin, that we're bad, that we're flawed, rather than saying, oh, well, here's a challenge. It's going to be difficult, but it's here as an opportunity for me.
Kind of like you said, not coming out being a pro football player right out the gate, you know, kind of going to the divine gym, as it were, to get your divinity
right
set in ways that where you understand it and where your wisdom actually flows through perfectly.
Exactly. Does that make sense to you? What's your take on that?
Oh, yeah. I'm in agreement with that. So I look at it where I believe we all need a little help every once in a while. And I am pulling out all the pop culture references tonight for some reason. But, you know, we all need a little help from our friends, as it were, whether they be divine angels or ascended masters or, you know, our sister or brother or coworker or just the guy at the bar that we go down to and talk to every once in a while.
It's funny you talk about this because I was tempted to write a blog entry about this. I was thinking about this on my way home, but maybe it came into my mind more for the discussion. Where do you draw the line between asking for help and being reliant on the help?
Mm.
In other words, when like here's the thing. I used to give readings. I used to give like tarot readings and stuff like that.
Oh, me too, yeah.
It started resonating the wrong way with me. Because it felt like people were not taking personal power. So there was two sides to me. There's like, first is, what's wrong with going to get a reading? Because you don't have all the answers in front of you, so sometimes you don't mind going and looking for the answer. But on the other hand, what about these people who are constantly getting readings?
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that in the episode, but I don't remember which one.
I think it was
power?
I think it might have been power and also psychic readings as well. And I think that's when, you know, like you, way back in 1997, 98, my friend and I, we would go down to the coffee shop every Friday night and basically give tarot readings for tips.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fun thing to do for a few months. And then all of a sudden, I started having people, I'd be walking down the grocery store and there'd be somebody that I gave a reading to like 3-4 weeks ago. And one of the things I was always very, very adamant about is saying, okay, this is not set in stone. This is just how things look right now, and you can change things by the choices you make from this point on. and people would come up to me like, dude, the reading you gave me was absolutely spot on. You know, everything that you said was going to happen happened exactly the way you said it was going to happen. I'm like, I remember that reading, and it wasn't a pretty one that most people would want to really go to. And I guess you kind of missed the whole, you know, the whole point. And I went through the same thing that you said you went through, where it felt like people were giving their power away to your ability to give them a reading without taking it as a form of advice or an opinion. They're like, oh, that's just the way it's going to be. I think that with a lot of Ascended Masters and, you know, friends and stuff like that as well, you know, you do get their opinion, get their idea, but what it comes down to is it's ultimately your choice, your decision, you know, your divinity stretching to come out.
Yeah, what about when you just can't make a decision?
That's why we have all these things like flip a coin and follow your heart and go with your gut.
Well, there's just times that you're so paralyzed with fear, and your ego is shouting so loud that you can't hear above the din of that. Then what do you do? So what I'm saying is I'm trying to discern here, when do you call on your Ascended Masters or your guides or any of that kind of wisdom versus looking for your own wisdom? When can you trust your own wisdom versus when you can't?
I think there's no definite way to say, in this instance, you can trust your intuition, in this instance, you can't. I think for every person at every given moment of their life, they know whether they are able to rely on their own personal wisdom or if they require the wisdom of somebody else or something else.
If you only require the wisdom of somebody else, isn't that a little debilitating? If you haven't learned to even call on your own personal wisdom. And I think that any message you get from any angel or Ascended Master or anything like that is going to direct you to call on your own personal wisdom. And I'm going to give an example of this. I was at work the other day, and I came across a problem. For those people who don't realize, I'm with technology service for a school district. I do support
really?
For computers. Sorry. Now, there may be listeners that don't know that, but when I was working on this computer, and I was like, well, what does this mean? I don't understand what this is. And so I did, as I punched in, brought up Google. And one of the students was looking over my shoulder, and he says, tech support uses Google? And I said, yeah. I can't believe tech support uses Google. Tech support uses Google. He was floored by the idea that tech support uses Google, right? Mm-hmm. I remember when I first started the job, I always felt weird that what if somebody sees me Googling an answer? It makes me look like I don't know what I'm doing. That's what I thought early when in the start of that job. Now, it's not that. It's to me, it's like, well, of course. Of course I'm going to use Google because I don't have all the answers and I'm not going to pretend to. And obviously Google does. You just have to know how to ask. It's kind of like the same thing with the Ascended Master thing. But the thing about it is, would
the
you
divine
hire someone?
Google.
The divine Google, exactly. That source is Google. So Google is source. But would you hire someone for tech support if you said, well, what's the extent of your computer knowledge? And they said, I Google everything.
Mm-hmm.
Would you hire them for tech support?
Probably not. No.
No, you probably wouldn't. You have to have an understanding of how computer systems work. You have to understand why something. But most of the time, I can walk up and have a pretty good idea of what it is. Some of it, or a lot of it, is from applied knowledge, and a lot of it is just kind of this something pops in my head, you know, and I tend to be right. But there are times when I don't know, and I go to Google. But I don't Google every single problem I walk up to the machine. I first will sit and try to figure it out. If it's an unknown problem that I've never come across before, I'll troubleshoot. I'll do trial and error, and I'll try to figure it out. And it takes time. It takes effort. But I'm not afraid to do that. And I think when we don't want to take the time and we don't want to take the effort and we want the answer just given to us, yield a Google search, then that's when we rely on our Ascended Masters to give us all the answers. That's when we do nothing but read these tomes over and over again. And I want to cite this one last thing on this point. And I was reading this really beautiful thing the other day, a couple days ago, that said, when you are continually looking for proof of something, you're not going to find it. You don't trust the information from whatever proof you've received already. So if you're continuing to look past whatever proof you've received, that means that you didn't buy into the proof and that you're not going to buy into the proof. No amount of proof is going to be good enough until you eventually just decide to accept what's already been given to you.
Yeah, that's like a quote that I got from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, where there's a point where the character Major Kira is basically saying, you know, that's the thing about faith. You know, basically, if you have faith, no explanation is necessary. And if you don't have faith, then no extent of explanation will satisfy you.
Exactly. That's very good. And I'm actually amazed that somebody else beside me watched Deep Space Nine, but because I loved it. So, hey, yay, there's someone else that watched it.
Geek card. The
geek card cred. I think that's a very good point. And I think the Ascended Masters are all basically saying you have to have faith in your own innate divinity to be able to employ your own innate divinity.
And that's what George Michael was saying in his song the whole time. You got to have faith, man.
George Michael, you got to have faith?
Got to have faith, the faith, the faith.
Oh, yeah, I know that song. Okay. Yeah.
So, well, anyway, this has been a very interesting discussion on Ascended Masters, and you know, we say this all the time. We'll definitely have to, you know, bring this up either as part of a future episode or as, you know, revisit it in the future. But I would like to take this opportunity to thank all of our listeners. If this is your first episode, we hope you enjoyed it. If this is your 100th episode, then we're wondering what episode you've been listening to, because we haven't recorded 100 episodes by now.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And feel free to go to our website and give us feedback. Give us feedback either on iTunes, where you just put in a search for Take the Red Pill under the podcast section, or go to taketheredpillpodcast.com and check out the links to all our episodes there. And in each of those, you can give comments and feedback on them. Or you can email us, which we have links on our website as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I am Donald Dalton, wishing you an ascended experience.
And I'm David Deere. Keep the faith.